You're listening to the Journey On podcast with Warwick Schiller. Warwick is a horseman, trainer, international clinician, and author who helps empower horse people from all over the world with the skills, knowledge, and mindsets needed to create trusting partnerships with their horses. Warwick offers a free 7-day trial to his comprehensive online video library that includes hundreds of full-length training videos and several home study courses at videos.warwickschiller.com. Just because you see
what is sure. G'day everyone, welcome back to the Journey On podcast. I'm your host Warwick Schiller, and my guest this week is an artist named Nika Quinn. And Nika is an artist in the same way that previous podcast guest Shalane Harkin is a poet. So Shalane is a mystic poet. She downloads poetry. Nika does something similar with her beautiful art. I'm just going to read you a little bio of Nika's. It says, Nika Quinn is an artist and visionary who aims to be a part of the wave of change happening within the equine industry. Art speaks to the soul much like animals do, through vibration and intention, which is why is it a powerful way to evoke change. She's originally from Wisconsin and now resides in Scotland, where she aims to host various creative workshops and retreats to inspire a deepened connection to self, nature, and horses. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation with Nika Quinn as much as I did recording it. But before we do, I want to remind you guys about the Journey On Podcast Summit we're having in the UK this year. I'm so excited about this thing. You know, I'm lucky I get to be the host for the whole thing, but even if I wasn't, I'd be going because the group of people that are coming to this podcast summit are amazing. You know, if you're a regular listener to the podcast, you would have heard podcasts by maybe all of these, some or all of these people. But so let me just run through the list a bit for you. Got Will Rogers, Christine Dixon, that's a podcast favorite. We get so much feedback on Christine. Tanya Kindersley, Katriona McDonald, Ben Bloody Atkinson's going to be there. That's awesome. Emily K's daughter's coming from Sweden, and we probably had the most feedback about her, positive feedback about her than any other podcast guest. Jane Pike's coming all the way from New Zealand. Rupert Isaacson's going to be there. Jennifer Zelix, Kathy Price, the Pasman sisters, Denise Elizabeth Byron, everybody's favorite astrologer, is going to be there. Chantel Pratt, everybody's favorite scientist. Gareth Marie's coming from all the way from South Africa. And Helen Spencer, the world's most traveled vet and most adventurous person I've ever met in my entire life, is going to be there. And so it's August 1st through 4th at the Crescent Theatre in Birmingham. And if you want to get tickets to that, I'd go on our website for the summit, which is summit.warwickschiller.com. And I'd get in soon because there's a limited seating in that place, and I'm pretty sure the whole thing's going to sell out, and I'm just so looking forward to it. Nika Quinn, welcome to the Journey On podcast.
Thank you for having me.
This is going to be exciting to unravel how you got to doing what you do. So behind me on the wall when I record these podcasts in my office is a piece of art that you sent me out of nowhere a number of years ago that I had matted and framed and put on my wall. And it's, I don't know, why don't you explain to me what exactly this piece of art, not what it represents, we'll get into that here in a minute, but where does it come from?
Okay, so that kind of portrait specifically, I still will do them, but I was in this really deep phase of, it was more of a channeling of somebody's energy. It was almost like I was practicing and learning how to tap into the energy of whoever it was that I was working with and taking everything about them and putting it into a piece of art that describes who they are in a visual way. And it's like pieces of ourselves that sometimes we don't even know about ourselves. That was the coolest part about these processes, was that sometimes I would tap into something or grab something out of nowhere, and it actually meant something to that person and we hadn't talked about it, or that there's more layers to this that they'll uncover months, years down the line. So these portraits have been such a crucial part of my evolution as an artist, actually.
So you mentioned the word channeling in there? How do you, you know, for instance, this, well, actually let's talk about this thing. So, in the middle is me. I've got a denim shirt on. My hands are pressed together in like a namaste thing. I have a cowboy hat. Above me, there is an eagle and two moons. There's a horse's head on either side of me. There's some palm trees with snakes crawling up them. Down the bottom, there's two waves crashing. There's a candle in the middle. There's some mountains. And there are some mushrooms in there somewhere. And I think there's a couple of feathers. Let me turn around. Yes, there are some feathers up the top too. Can you tell me what all that stuff represents? Yeah. And especially, and this is not a podcast about me, but this is, you sent this to me. So I kind of want to understand the process of how you channel this stuff.
Yes. So, I mean, it's taken me a long time to even accept the word channel, but I see it as I'm the mediator in between what's up in the ethers and what goes into the page. So for your portrait specifically, you missed out the part that the eye, the third eye is actually missing.
Oh, there's a third eye on my hat. Okay, yes. And there is
I love that.
There is a lock. Is there a lock on my pocket?
Yes, there's a lock and a key somewhere, I do believe. And I believe that there's also, I'm trying to remember now. I think that there was a heart in your heart space around in the denim. It was almost like stitched in.
And I have never seen that before. And now I see it that you pointed out. Yes.
So, okay. So for me, I love putting little tiny hidden things in my art. And so even something like that, that's a symbol to me of, and I think it was stitched in or it's like barbed wire, but it was almost like you've had to unlock your heart in this opening, right? In this awakening that you've been through. So it's almost like you've been holding the key all along, but you actually had to do it yourself. And then from there, all of this other stuff can expand, like the eagle wings and the third eye coming from your cowboy hat. And I put in a lot of landscape because you've been to so many places and even the world, the globe behind you is like this tribute to not only your reach around the world and your impact on other people, but also the physical landscapes that you've been able to traverse. So like the mountains, different types of mountains, desert and, you know, more glacial. And then the ocean, because obviously, I don't know what part of Australia you're from, but, you know, I think of beaches and ocean with Australia often. And I know that I believe that there's maybe camel. There's something, I remember putting in something in there that you were riding, or maybe that there's like camels or there's something hinting at these other kinds of excursions and animals that you've worked with. I love putting different symbolism within this imagery that just gets to be dissected over time. And so the words that I added there, the open heart, open mind, it's almost just like, that's how I see what you're doing and how you're operating in the world and sharing your journey with others. And it's like you've opened your heart, which opens your mind. And that is encouraging to everybody else that's along with you on this journey.
I found the camel. There's a shadow of a camel on one of the sand dunes. So, I've got the big lock where my heart goes, but the two horses flanking me, they have keys on the side of their head.
They're the key. That's right. Mm-hmm. They were the key to open your heart. That was what it was. And I believe that the candle in the center, to me, that represented the flame of, I don't know, it's just like, you know that saying where you don't have to dim your light to shine for others, or there's a saying in there somewhere. The passing of the candle, you know, like your torch can stay that bright and you can still pass on that that flame. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, it's super cool. Thank you so much for doing it. So obviously, let's talk about why me? Okay. So why did you do this painting for me? And this is more about what's your connection to me? Are you a horse girl? I know you're an artist. Are you a horse girl? What's the story there?
That's hilarious. Yeah, obviously, it's like, that's not very clear. yes, horses have also been my awakening journey, if you will. So as I've gone down the rabbit hole over the past few years, your podcast led me to different people to learn from as well. And I was going through different podcasts at the time and, you know, just trying to learn from other people in this world that I didn't even know existed that long ago, you know? And so, yes, your podcast was very influential on who I started kind of like taking information from. And when I started doing these portraits and getting more and more confident with them, I actually, one, as I told you prior in our conversation, I almost did it as a challenge for myself because I hadn't done one for a man yet. I'd been working with all this very feminine energy and most of my clients are all women, honestly. So yeah, it was almost like a little push for me to do something with masculine energy, but also obviously it's very balanced, but and I just wanted it to potentially just, I don't know, reach others in some way. So by sharing it with you, it could potentially be seen by others. And it's not just about my work. It's about the vibration of what that art can bring. It's about the, because I believe that art, and I truly believe that art is the thing that can, it's one part that can change the world because it speaks to us in ways that words can't. Right. And it speaks to our soul directly. It speaks to our heart and we get to make meaning from it. And that's the power of it. I truly believe that. And it speaks to people when they're ready as well. Like if you don't resonate with a piece of art at a certain time, but you look at it years later and all of a sudden it has, you know, so much more meaning, it's because you've grown and now you can see that meaning. And what the artist puts in at like from their end might be totally different than what you get on the other end of it. And that, again,
it's almost when the student is ready, the teacher will appear and the piece of art is the teacher, but you might not see the messages in it until you're ready. So tell me about the channeling process of this, you know, because I mean, you got so much. There were, when I got the piece of art from you and I looked at it, I'm like, well, there's a lot to it. And I'm a little bit of a, you know, so a bit of a public figure. So if you've heard some podcasts, you know a bit about my story, but how much of what you knew from, you know, reading things or listening to podcasts or whatever is in that, and how much of like a download is in there?
So I would say, obviously, the mental part where and with this process, I would usually ask people a bunch of questions and we would have a Zoom call and we would, you know, exchange because usually it's the Zoom call that I pick up on the energy of people. So again, this was a challenge because we never spoke and I was doing it purely based on, that was part of the challenge, based on just the things that I did know, but really tuning in. And so for me, I do try to really, really just tune into the energy. And what that means to me is getting into the flow state when I'm drawing. I sit with the energy, meaning I'll recall the conversation that I've had with that person. And like most people that are listening can relate to some level of being sensitive enough to pick up on somebody's energy when you're speaking to them. You know, that there, you can remember that feeling when you speak to somebody. So I kind of hold that feeling of our conversation and I'll hold that with me and I'll maybe read over what they've written before. And then I kind of go into this like little vortex where I just am just staring at this page for hours. Like, I don't even know. Time just dissolves. Like, it's the beauty of the flow state. And it's something that you can access in different ways. And that's a rabbit hole we could go down at another point. But to me, that's where the magic lies. Like when I get into that flow state, that's where all these little inklings of, little hints of add this over here or use this color instead. like those little whispers I just follow, and I don't plan a single thing with these. Like it totally comes out, and sometimes they change, you know, like sometimes I'll start sketching and then it'll kind of morph into something else. But by the end, it's just like adding little symbols after things. And it's just such a fun process to really sit with because it's so free. And yet I'm really working with, not a constraint, but it's like I'm working within this container, which is their energy. And yeah, it took a while to really understand what was happening, but I've done probably over 60 of those and probably only within like a year and a half. I did so many in such a short time, and it has taught me so much about what I do now. And I actually focus on logos now.
Oh, really? We're going to get to what you're doing now and how you got to this point. Right now, we're still just at this point. So what I'm always interested in from people who, you know, with intuition or whatever it is that they get messages from, they come from the ether, and you said you get these little whispers about how to put this, you know, why don't you put this little thing here or whatever. That whisper, inverted commas, does it come as a whisper, like as a voice? Is it a mental picture? Is it a feeling in your body? If so, where in your body is it? Can you actually like describe that, or is it just comes to you?
That's a really good question, actually. I think it kind of comes in different ways sometimes, and it depends on how deep in the process I am. So I would say that at the start, if I were to be in the sketching process, it might come as more of a, like I see everything in my mind's eye. It's almost like I'm always looking at this movie screen or like this blank screen in front of me. And I get to like, just, I don't know. It's almost like a video happening in front of me where I can push pieces all together and I can see it before I actually put it into the page. And so in that process, a lot of it comes as an image. Further down the line in the process, it might just be like a word that pops in my head. You know, it might just be the certain animal that just, maybe it is imagery. Again, a lot of it is, yeah, it's such a weird thing to try to capture, to understand, because I don't really think about it. It's just, yeah, it is, can be a whisper, and an image is mostly how I hear it. Or,
so obviously you've got to like quiet your mind to get in this state. Does the act of sitting down to create this art, is that the act itself, or do you sit down and like meditate first? What gets you from sitting here having a conversation with me to being in the state to where this is going to come through you? What's the process like that?
I would love to say that I like have a full blown like meditation and I go inward and all this stuff before, but I really don't. I genuinely could start even just from right now, us sitting here, I can really drop into a drawing. It might not work that way for, like, I couldn't drop into a meditation right now, but like when it comes to drawing, it puts me there, if that makes sense. And I almost see it as a very liminal space. I almost feel like when I enter that drawing, I am conscious. Sometimes the flow state's so deep and I totally am just dissolved and there's nothing, you know, but colors and the page. But a lot of times it's like this liminal space where I'm very conscious of everything. And yet it's almost like I'm on automatic, like my hand's just going, you know, and I could be talking to somebody and things could be happening, but it's almost like it's just kind of like unfolding before me. It's really, actually quite, it's wild.
It's, yeah. It's like something you would see in a movie.
Yeah. You know, like it happens to me. It's just crazy.
It's almost like, did you ever watch the Netflix series on the chess player? What was that one called? Yes. Queen's Gambit, where she would lay in bed and she'd just do all those chess piece things. I can just imagine that. I was, when you were saying that, I was just imagining the scene like of you in a movie like sketching and talking to someone and just having this stuff flow out of you?
Sometimes it is how it feels, definitely. Mm. I wouldn't say it's like 100% of the time, like as anything, ebbs and flows. Like, I don't want to paint this picture of this perfection every time. However, when I trust, when I'm in it, that is how it goes. But I have to also ride the waves of like when there's a creative drought, which happens as it does, you know, I have to also accept that and ride that wave.
Yeah, have you ever read Stephen Pressfield's book, The War of Art?
No, but I've.
Because it's about creating art of any kind, whether it's writing or whatever, but it's about those droughts, and there's times when it just comes out of you and the times when it doesn't, and you have to be at peace with the, what you call the drought. Like you can't beat yourself up over it. And you almost did beat yourself up a second ago, actually, because I said, do you get into a meditative state? And you said something like, well, you know, I'd really like to say that I do, but I don't. It was kind of like, yeah, I probably should be getting in a meditative state, but I don't. But no, there is no right or wrong answer to creativity, is there? Like, however it comes to you, it comes to you. So I was surprised, actually, because we've never met before. I was surprised when we got on here and I looked like, wow, you're very young. What did you say? You're 31? Yeah, you know, I was a late starter. I kind of didn't look at the world any different from 0 to 50, and then I've had a bit of an upward swing from there. And you were looking at, you're 31, you're looking at the world in a completely different way than I did when I was 31, and I want to unravel, how did you get to there? So what was your childhood like? Did you have parents who encouraged intuition and things like that, or did you have to like outgrow your cultural conditioning?
And yes, so I wouldn't say that. No, okay. My parents encouraged my artistic abilities and my imagination. I grew up. My grandparents were both artists, and so I was the only grandchild that really took to it. So both of them being actually professional artists in their life, they obviously wanted to share and pass down anything. So I was always encouraged from, literally I have sketchbooks from like 2 or 3 years old. So always encouraged to keep a sketchbook, not just pieces of paper. It was like, hold it all into these places so you can look back on them. And so they always encouraged me to like sign it and date it, like even from a young age. So I was very influenced in terms of, or encouraged as a child to really just be as artistic and expressive as I wanted to be. Now, obviously with cultural conditioning and, you know, social thing pressures, I dampened myself a lot. You know, like there was a lot of that I would keep under wraps. Like I really felt self-conscious about sharing any of my art with other people. Like I carried a sketchbook, like it was like Velcroed to me, you know, like I always had a sketchbook on me, but when people would ask to see it or saw I was drawing something, I would like cover it up and just be super self-conscious. Cause that was like somebody asking to like peer inside my mind, you know, it felt very vulnerable. When I chose to do it, it was a different story. But when people would ask and I was like, oh, okay. Like, I don't really want to do that.
So do you feel like your art was like you were putting a part of you down on paper, like you're being quite vulnerable in your art, even at that age?
Yes, 100%. I think there was always a level of depth. When I'm looking back at my childhood self, like there's always this level of depth that I never let anyone see. And it wasn't that it was bad. It just was like, I just didn't think other people get it. So I just didn't want the judgment, you know? So, a lot of my art, my writing, like I would write poetry or stories. I was always doing something. And I would just go sit in my treehouse or in the woods or do something like and talk about my connection to nature. Even as a child, I love looking back at some of those writings because I was like, that is so pure, you know, like I wasn't doing that for anybody else but myself. And I think that was the power in it, was that it wasn't coming from a place of ego or a place of wanting to do the best in art class or whatever. It was just that I loved to do it and I did it every stinking day.
Do you feel like, you know, because this quote unquote channeling thing that you got to doing, do you feel like you were doing that back then?
Surprisingly, yes. I couldn't have told you that like a few years ago, even, or I couldn't have told you that at the time, obviously. But when I'm looking back at some of the stuff that I've done, I was like, as a 10-year-old, as a 14-year-old, I'm like, where was that coming from? I hadn't even, like, at the time, the internet, I mean, I wasn't on the internet looking at things. Like, there was maybe a Google search that I could look up some images for reference, but I wasn't finding this inspiration from places. Like, I was like, I look back at some of these drawings and some of the themes that would come up, and I was like, where is this coming from? It was really cool to kind of dive back through my sketchbooks and some of my past art, because I could see the transformation when I started getting into more of my, like, we'll call it more my egoic period, which was like my college years.
Okay. Do you think, looking back at your artwork back then, was there any particular thing that you, and what were you doing? Was it pencil sketching? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, it was mostly pencils, colored pencils.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there a theme that you were interested in drawing? I had an artist on the other day, and I was talking about when I was a kid, I drew, and she paints horses, but I drew a lot. I was quite artistic, but I only wanted to draw horses. And I went to art classes, and it kind of annoyed me because we had to draw things other than horses. And I didn't, you know, I didn't really apply myself to that because, I didn't really learn to get a lot better because I didn't want to do the work. I just wanted the end result, you know. Did you have a theme of things?
Yeah, I would say the theme was always horses, of course. Horses, nature in any way, just animals, creatures. But I also, which is super interesting to bring it all together with this portrait that's in behind you, I actually found that I did drawings like that for myself and for some of my friends when I was younger. So I found a picture of me, like I drew myself with all the things around me that make me who I am. And so it was, yeah, I can't believe that that journeyed with me to today. I think that is just so cool. But other than that, the big theme that always came through was women in nature. And it would always be this feminine face with her hair blowing and like horses running through it or wild things just like happening in her. That was like over and over.
You kind of answered a question I was about to ask a minute ago. And my question was getting to, was your art back then, was it like, you know, if it was nature, was it some grass with a tree and a squirrel in it? Or was it, it had all the different elements? And you've answered that question. So that's super cool at that. So it wasn't like you got to a point and you're like, you know what? I might start doing these portrait things to where it kind of, you know, it's a representation of all the parts of a person that it came to. What do you think? How old were you when you did your first one of those?
I want to say I was like maybe like 13 or something, okay. Somewhere around there. And yeah, it was just, I always had like funky things happening. I always wanted to push it a little bit. So if it looked too normal, I didn't like it. Like it couldn't be too realistic or too plain. If there was like a scene with a person in a tree, for example, I don't know, then there'd have to be like a UFO picking up a cow in the background or something. Okay. You know, I always had to have something that just had a little extra.
Wow. And so a minute ago you mentioned college. So did you study art in college?
I did. Yes. I actually went for graphic design and I'd never touched a computer in an artistic way before. So I just totally made that leap with no thought behind it besides I could probably get a job in that one day. And yeah, I'm actually using my college degree, which is great.
So even back then you were like, I could do this for a living at some point in time.
Yeah. It's really interesting. I was very unconscious at the time, as we most of us are at that age, but I've always listened to my intuition, like without even knowing what that means. I've always had this little like background compass guiding me. And I just go, yeah, sounds good. Like, okay, I'm going to do graphic design. Okay, sounds good. Oh, after college, like this is a whole other part of the journey, but like even just little steps along the way or like the job that I really wanted, I was like, yeah, I'm going to get it. No big deal. Like I know it and I'm going to ask for that job and I'm going to have it. Like, then I didn't have that confidence on the outside as much, but my internal confidence was there, which saying that out loud is just.
Yeah. Like your true self kind of knew what you need to do, but your ego self was a little bit, you know, was a bit doubtful or a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for here? I can't even come up with the word I'm looking for, but yeah. So you had a little bit of self-confidence on the outside, but on a soul level, you knew what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And people would ask me like, what's your plan? What's this? I'm like, I don't know. Like I was a very fly by the seat of my pants kind of person at that time. And I just went with whatever I wanted to do. I wanted to be free. You know, like that was a feeling of like, I just want to be able to live my life to the fullest. Like that would be my regret in life if I didn't. And I didn't even know what that meant at the time, but it just was like this feeling of like grasping for adventure, grasping for meaning, really, right? That is what we're all kind of grasping for at some point.
So what was this job that you got after college?
Well, actually, this is a whole part of the journey. So when...
Let's hear
right
it.
Before, okay.
You're in the right place. So,
right before college, I actually... I'd spent every summer, my horse journey started at a place in Michigan. It was a guest ranch. And so every year I'd go back and that was my like horse time. And that's how I learned to ride, was just like throwing on a horse and cantering through the forest, you know, like that was my lessons and which felt very free. Right. And so I really wanted to work there. And so through all college, I worked all my summers there and yeah, I got my basis of working on a ranch in that way and working with people and horses. And that led me to being able to go for a year in New Zealand and travel around and work at different horse tracking places and different farms. And yeah, I kind of actually didn't do the job after college. I decided that.
So tell me about your experiences in New Zealand. I've been in New Zealand quite a bit, and it's when people ask my wife and I, what's your favorite place you've ever been to? Even though we've been to some pretty exotic sort of places, we always kind of come back to New Zealand. It's the one place that we don't get sick of going to.
1,000. Oh my God. That country has my heart forever. And I can't wait to go back because it truly has everything. It just feels so nice there in so many ways. I traveled with my friend at the time and her and I had worked at that ranch together. So we decided to just buy a one-way ticket and head over across the world for a year because why not? So we started up in the North Island at the very top and we worked our way all the way down into the South. And yeah, we worked at a handful of different trekking places, And yeah, just had the best time. It was such a freeing part of my life, like in so many ways. And I actually met my now Scottish husband in the South Island.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did. Yep. Yeah, that was... It's so funny to think back on that time. We were very different people. But my friend and I, my friend Laurie and I, we were working at this pub in this Irish pub, and a Scottish guy and Scouser were working at it as well. And they were friends who'd met in Australia. And it turns out that I ended up marrying the Scottish guy and she ended up marrying the Liverpudlian.
What did you refer to him as a second ago? What, a Scouser?
Scouser.
Which is what?
From Liverpool. I guess, I know, I kind of second guess. Should I say that? But it is what it is. Yeah.
Is that a derogatory term for someone from Liverpool?
No, it's just their slang for themselves.
Okay. Where in New Zealand was that?
A tiny town called Hamner Springs outside of Christchurch.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a wild time. But yeah, it's just so funny how her and I went there and ended up falling in love with these two guys that are British, and now we have to figure out our lives. And I've moved to Scotland, and now they live in Michigan. So it's like we kind of like
That's pretty cool. So what happened after your year in New Zealand? And well, let me ask you this. Was there anything that happened in New Zealand that you would think is part of, you know, let's say the metaphysical part of your journey?
Definitely. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I had interest in like energy work, and I had interest in yoga, and I had interest in things that I just didn't fully understand yet before I left for New Zealand. And so actually going there, I'd sought out a few yoga retreats, and that we worked at as well. And so working at a few yoga retreats and just learning from some of the people that we were with, because, oh my God, like we were just in right company in many ways. I definitely started learning a lot more about just energy in general, and talk about listening to your intuition. Like, I feel like that's what guided me all throughout that year, you know, like just what place should we go next? And just kind of listening to the nudges, right? And yeah, along the way, just finding people that had an interesting book that I ended up reading, or just things like that. But I had this space and time in my life where I was absorbing so much information because I could. And from there, I actually flew across the world to Scotland and stayed there for a few months with my boyfriend at the time, or, you know, like just really just started out dating, but still living with his parents over in Scotland for 3 months, you know, as you do. And yeah, so then kind of fast forwarding a little bit, but I ended up working at a ranch down in Virginia with my friend again. Her and I went down to Virginia, and we kind of got sucked into this little world where we thought this possibility that we could maybe take over this ranch and live there and have all these dreams come true that we could. Yeah. It was like this big moment of like, oh, wow, we could really do this. And many things led us down the road of like, okay, this isn't going to work. But during that time, I met a horse who changed everything, as many people's stories go.
Tell me about it.
When I first met him, his name's Mo. He was a massive Frisian saddlebred, came from the Amish. He was super, super sensitive, like unlike any horse I'd ever met. And I couldn't tell him what to do. Like from day one, I realized that he was very much so in control of the energy between us, even if I didn't fully know what that meant. And over the couple of years of working with him, I realized how much, like, he was just lesson after lesson for me of showing up authentically and what that meant, because I was super disconnected from my emotions at the time. If anything, people joked that I was like a very cold, unemotional person. I really just kind of like shut down that part of myself because, yeah, it was vulnerable, right? And this horse really pushed me to show who I was, right? Like he, some days I would show up and I would, this was a time where I was very not myself. I was very much of a shell of myself. I went through a really deep bout of anxiety and I lost tons of weight and I just wasn't me anymore. Like I there's a lot of circumstance around that, but I definitely was losing a part of myself. Maybe in a good way, but but anyway, so I would go out to the fields and this horse would some days just run away from me, like actually turn around and run. And then I would get more frustrated and sad about myself. And then I would realize maybe the next day when I show up and I didn't bring all of this to him, then he'd come up to me. So it was this really, really rocky process of learning that without any awareness or any outside influence of what was even going on. Because at that time, it really wasn't clear to me that that's how horses operated, because that's not what I was taught. And yeah, so there was a lot of learning with him. And then one winter, I went over to Europe and I stayed with a woman in Switzerland who was doing clicker training with horses. And I'd never heard of that before. And she, the first day, gave me a Karen Pryor book and I sat down and read it in the afternoon. And I was like, shit, my entire life has changed.
Wasn't Don't Shoot the Dog, was it?
It was.
It was? Have you ever listened to my podcast on books that have influenced me?
Yes.
And that's one of the books. Yeah.
So yeah, after reading that book that afternoon, I was like, oh my God, I have to see everything different now. Like I just knew it in my heart. I was like, this is a turning point for me. And so for the next couple of weeks of staying there, she would take me out and show me some of the stuff that she was doing with her horses. And I was just like in awe. And so here I am all excited about clicker training and all this, like positive reinforcement in general. And I went back to this ranch and presented this idea and was just laughed at. Like actually just totally stumped out. Like, why would that even be a possibility? Like you're just, you know what I mean? Like there was just no potential with going forward in that. And so I knew that I didn't have that freedom to grow there anymore.
This is the post in Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah. So I knew once I started changing my thoughts, and this is when I started listening to podcasts and realizing that other people were doing this kind of stuff. Yeah, it was kind of my turning point and realizing that I can no longer do the things I'm doing. And now I can't even operate properly out with the horses because I no longer feel like I'm allowed. Like, I don't feel like I should be doing these things. So it was very incongruent. I was very incongruent. And yeah. And then one day, the horse I'd been working with, I thought everything was going great. I had gotten on that day and everything felt fine. I had kind of checked in. And next thing I know, it was fireworks and I was thrown over his head and I smashed my face and like could have been way, way worse, you know. But I came away and questioned a lot, obviously. I was like, well, what happened? Why did that happen? And I got this little whisper saying, like when I was, you know, laying down with ice pack on my head, got this little whisper saying, check under the saddle. And I was like, what? And I'd asked somebody I was working with to check under the saddle pad. And it turns out that there was little burrs, you know, little Velcro burrs. Yeah. They were right under where I would have sat down on his back that day. And I had no idea. So I had this little, like, I heard it, you know, like that was the first time I'd really like I don't know if it was him connecting or if it was just like my own higher self, whatever it was, but I got this like, oh my God, like there was like something beyond just the realization that he didn't do that just out of nowhere. It was that now I'm being connected and shown why. And that there's this greater force at play that I have to now listen to. And yeah, so then I was pretty terrified to get back on him after that, just because it was a pretty bad fall. And I also went away another winter, and I went to America for a few months. I wasn't away.
You keep skipping over all these amazing journeys that I want to drag you back to. So a minute ago you said, oh yes, I decided to go to Europe for a while. I met this lady who's a clicker trainer. What? Don't skip over that, because the guy, you're like talking to Jim Masterson. It's like pulling teeth. Tell me about, you're at this place in Virginia and you decide to go to Europe. Why'd you go to Europe and how'd you end up in Switzerland?
Yes. Okay. I know it's a lot of threads to piece together. So sometimes it's hard for me to even kind of keep track of my own timeline.
That's all right. I'll keep you on track.
Thank you. So obviously I was with a guy that was living in Scotland at the time. And unfortunately, America doesn't allow people in to stay very long. And you definitely can't work while you're doing that.
Right.
So we would spend like 6 months apart, and then maybe we'd be together for like 3 months at a time, or, you know, kind of like back and forth, but we would have really long breaks in between. I can attest to a relationship, that's for sure.
It's a really good way to get to know each other.
Communication.
I mean, Robin and I, you know, when we lived 2 hours apart when we were dating, and then I moved back to Australia for 6 months, and, you know, this is before the internet, so we wrote letters, you know what I mean? So, yeah.
I mean, wrote letters because we were kind of just like that. He's also an artist and a musician. Mm-hmm. And so we have a very creative relationship in general. Just like we love having like funky things in our space, and we're just, yeah, we're a little bit odd. And then we like,
have you ever watched the TV show Outlander? I'm picturing your husband is Jamie. Okay. That's the picture I have in my
show. A little shorter, and yeah.
Spot on. That's Jamie. Okay. I get it.
So does have kind of rest.
Does it? He's a ginger. Okay. Yeah. That's cool. Why Switzerland? How did you end up in Switzerland?
So during the winter is when we met up again so that we could be together and, you know, have a relationship. So I went over there. We spent some time in Scotland with this family. And then we actually just did a Europe trip. So we started in Croatia that year. Yeah. We started in Croatia, had Christmas there with all the markets and stuff, and then went down to Serbia and Macedonia, and then stayed in Greece for a while, hopped over to Italy. And we ended up staying at this is how we would stay a lot of places, and this was the place in Switzerland as well, is a thing called Workaway. I'm sure you've heard of it. Yeah.
Is it like you work for your room and board sort of thing?
Yeah. And there's a website that you can go to that it's literally like, I'm going to be in this country. Who is looking for work in like these types of areas? Like, do you need art? Do you need animal care? Do you need landscaping help or a building? Or, you know, people put out what they need, and then you can come to them and say like, oh, I've got these skills. Can we make it?
So you guys like backpackers, basically.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
I can travel with a backpack.
Yeah.
And Workaway is just such a good way to experience a culture, because you get to actually be immersed in it. And yeah, it's my favorite thing to do in our travels, because you always come away with the coolest experiences. You meet the best people, and it's authentic. You know, like you're in the place for a few weeks usually, and get to really know a place. And it's definitely such a cool way to travel.
And you're with locals. You're not doing the tourist route.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we, of course, do our tourist thing along the way and in between, but we'd always have like spots where we're like, okay, we'll be there for a few weeks and then we'll move on. And Yeah. So that's how we ended up in Switzerland. And yeah.
Somewhere in there, you were saying that you had shut down your emotions. And I, you know, I've talked about quite a bit on the podcast. I've always had shut down emotions. So I didn't know emotions were a thing. You know what I mean? I'd never really felt them, or the full range of them. I felt some in my body. And my question to you is, you'd had them before that? So my question is, had you had them before? I'm not saying you had. Had you had them before that? And if you did have them before that, and then you kind of shut them down, are you fully aware that they've gone away, or does the light just kind of fade to where you don't notice it?
I would say that I kind of just never really felt it. Like it was just kind of always numb. And I think it was, I think I liked to pretend a lot that I didn't have them. I don't know why, but even when I was really young, I think it was just because I was really sensitive. And so it was easier to pretend like I wasn't affected than to be crying. Like I felt like I was in my head, you know, like, and it wasn't that there was anything really bad or traumatic with it. It was simply because I think I was just really sensitive and it was a little overwhelming. So I just instead just made a little barrier there. Right. That was easier.
The thing I'm trying to wrap my head around is I've always, you know, I am starting to realize exactly how sensitive I am, but because I'd shut down my emotions, I'm not really listening to my body. I feel like I hadn't got the whispers, but it sounds like you shut down your emotions, but you get the whispers. And this is like fascinating me right now, because I always thought it was one or the other. Mm. You are now like opening my mind to like, oh, it's a possibility to shut down your emotions, but still be able to get the whispers. Can you elaborate?
Really interesting. That is actually really interesting. I don't know if I would have been able to pin that, but I think, yeah, we would. A lot of times we'll think that like our bodies, like being connected to our bodies is how you get then connected to your intuition, right? Like that. Right. It's almost like you think that that's a chain reaction. But I think genuinely, when I'm trying to kind of process this in this moment, I think it was my art keeping me in this place of like expansion up here, you know, like I feel like this place that I would go into, you know, that would, I knew how to live there, if that makes sense. I knew how to live in the ethereal, in the imaginative, the more energetic, whether I knew it or not. So even as a child, like living in my imagination, yeah, maybe I'm a little Pisces escapist, but that was where, that was where it was really comfortable for me to live, was in my daydreams. And it wasn't, again, because of like trauma or anything. It was simply because I loved it. I loved being up there. That was where anything was possible. And this reality was that, yeah, that's not always the possible. Like there's physical barriers. I can't just fly on a Pegasus over this moon and all these oceans and stuff, you know, like that I'm drawing. That was way more fun. So maybe where we're talking about this little, these whispers and this intuition being different than our listening to our body's wisdom, maybe they are separate.
So you're a Pisces too? Makes sense. Have you ever seen I think you can get it on like Amazon. It's a movie. It's a documentary called Sensitive. It's about highly sensitive people. You ever watch that? I watched it recently and I don't know how I found it. I think it was, I don't know how I found it, but it was like, that makes sense. That makes sense. someone who was featured in it was Alanis Morissette. And in that, she has like a reconnection with her father, you know, because you think about her music was very angst ridden, but she reconnects with her, I don't know if she reconnects with the father, but she's talking to her father in the thing, and they're coming to the realization that she's very sensitive, and he just looked at her and he said, "I just didn't know what to do with you." Like, you know, when you, I think when you are very sensitive, you don't act like the rest of the world. And so you don't kind of fit into the rest of the world. And, you know, I had a thing the other day where, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast where I did the Gaucho Derby.
Oh, not yet.
So I had some struggles with the organization because the rules that they set for the us and themselves, they didn't follow. And I was very, and I take things very literally. And the other day, someone, a horse trainer from Canada, sent me a TikTok, and it was this guy, and you know, he was talking to himself like he was playing both characters in this TikTok, that one of the characters was accusing the other one of being autistic. And he said, and the other character says, "Well, I don't flap my arms and I don't flap my arms and stim like that." And the other guy says, "Yes, but you pick your skin and you take things very literally and whatever." And anyway, so this, the message that this horse trainer from Canada sent me, she said, while I'm watching this, I'm just imagining you in the Gaucho Derby spinning your wedding ring and getting all bent out of shape because the organizers didn't do the things the way they do." And then she said, "I've been watching you stimming on your wedding ring on video for years." And when she said that, I'm like, "What?" And then I started looking at some videos, and I'm sitting there and you'll see me spinning that ring around, or I've got to be doing something or other. And it was kind of like, oh.
It's rings.
Oh, really? I'm like, there's a few spectrum-y things that I, I exhibit. Also think of, you know, I've had a number of people look at me and go, "You've been diagnosed with ADHD. And then there's the sensitive part. And I think these things are all just parts of a spectrum, but I think I've got, you know, that there's the sensitive bit, and I don't know if the sensitive bit is attached to maybe being spectrum-y, or the ADHD comes from the dissociating because you're sensitive. I mean, it's a complicated thing. It's like if you're an artist, it's like you took a bunch of colors and put them all together and made another color, and it's kind of brown, but you know, yeah, it's just.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Actually, I'm not qualified to talk about anything in that realm of stuff.
However, me neither. This is just all ponderings.
Yeah. And while we're pondering, I kind of want to bring in this idea that maybe we all actually are meant to be in some way on this spectrum. And actually the cultural conditioning is telling us that that's the unnormal. And maybe us being normal, in air quotes, is actually a dulled down version of what we're really meant to be doing. And maybe these highly sensitive people and maybe these ways that people's brains work differently is actually the greatest strength that we can all have as individuals. And if you think about maybe like cultures or, you know, communities or tribes, you know, thousands of years back, they needed people that had these like really unique characteristics, and like everyone needed to have a role. And now we're just kind of like, kind of like dulling everything out. I mean, even the fact that so many schools, at least in America, like are getting rid of like art programs and music programs. Yeah. It's like, that is where the genius lies. Like that is where these things will come out of kids, and you'll learn so much more about themselves even through that expression. So I don't know. That's just a pondering, but I almost feel like maybe we're all in some way there. And I'm not trying to downplay anybody who's, you know, genuinely, you know, working with their own mental health in that way. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a little.
I just was taking some notes while you're writing that. And it's like neurotypical is actually the dulled down version of neurodivergent. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a continuum and we're all somewhere on the thing and there is no right or wrong place to be. And I think there are gifts about being anywhere on that continuum, on that spectrum. But there's also, you know, there's the yin and the yang. And I think that, you know, the shadow side of any of the gifts we have is another challenge. And there is no place that doesn't have the, like, all places have gifts, but all places have, you know, the shadow side, the
challenge. Have you ever looked into gene keys?
You know what? I have. There's a couple of those things I've looked into from podcast guests, but I haven't gone down a rabbit hole of, you know, like there's Enneagrams and there's gene keys and then there's, what's the other one?
There's human design.
Human design.
Yeah. The gene keys, though, what you just said was actually exactly what the whole point of it is that there are different qualities, like let's say, you know, like any other Enneagram or human design or whatever, like you kind of have your own chart. And then in these different qualities that you show, there's always a shadow, a gift, and a city, which is like the highest level of it. And the journey is to realize that there's shadows and gifts within every quality within us. And it's not about eliminating, it's about bringing to light. Yeah, it's not about eliminating, it's about illuminating it. So that way you can bring it all together.
I'm going to write that down. Is that from Gene Keys or that just get downloaded from you? It's not about eliminating. It's about illuminating. Holy cow, that is profound. I love that.
Yeah, that is part
You'll
of
see a video at some point in time where I'm talking about a horse and I will be saying.
Yes. I love it. Yeah, it really is. So it's about showing light on our shadow parts. It's not about trying to suffocate or get rid of it or I'm healed now. It's literally about that there's gifts within that shadow. And maybe it's just in growth. Maybe it's just in, how to evolve into the next version of us. But we need the full spectrum of it.
Back to spectrum again. Yeah, so So this whole part right here started about me talking about or bringing up the fact that you said that you were shut down from your emotions, but then I got into the, well, how did you still have the intuition? That's, you know, how do you shut down that without shutting down the other?
This is a very good pondering session with this because I've never thought about it in this way before.
Well, so that because that's your normal. You have the both. I don't have the both, and I keep thinking that the the getting in touch with my emotions is what's going to get me in touch with the intuition thing. Too, you know, last year at the podcast summit, you know, at the podcast summit, we have presenters do like a TED talk type thing, a 20-minute talk on whatever sets their soul on fire that they want to share. But then we have these panel discussions, and one of the panel discussions was on intuition, and I'm the moderator, you know, I'm the host, and so we've got all these people up on stage who are very intuitive and have these gifts. And I've always been of the, probably misguided, but the opinion that intuition comes to you as bodily sensations, you know, because I don't have bodily sensations. I don't have intuition. That's the story I'm telling myself. And then basically, one of them gives me basically an ass chewing on stage in the nicest way possible. But she said, she looked around the room at, you know, if you think about the room is basically a microcosm of what we're doing in life, you know, like we're doing the podcast and whatever, got all these people together. She says, you can't get here without intuition, but there's other ways that things can come to you. There's, you know, there's clairvoyance, there's clairconsciousness, there's clairsentience, there's all these different clairs. And she said, you just have a different clair. And it was like, oh, because I think I've been beating myself up for not having the clair that I think I should have, that getting intuition somatically. And there's, you know, there's different ways of it coming. And obviously you do that too, because you could shut down the emotions but still have the whisperings come in, you know?
Yeah. And I think that is something that's super hard for people to understand in general when you're kind of learning how to work with your intuition. And what that even means is because everyone's going to experience it differently. There's no one way to, I mean, everyone's journey is different. Everybody's life is different. How we hear, how we see, like we could all see things differently, like physically, you know, like I don't know how you see the world. There's so many different ways that we can experience life. And so I think experiencing intuition is going to be the same. There's going to be a wide continuum of ways that it can enter your field, you know?
And I remember when I was a kid.
There's no right way.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I used to think, I wonder what I see as green. Do other people see it as green? Or does the world look like a kaleidoscope to someone else? And my normal, I think, you know, the sky's blue and the grass is green. I wonder if it looks like pink and purple to someone else, but that looks normal to them. And we'll never know.
We'll never know. Do you know, it's an interesting question I've started asking people. There's two, actually. One of them is, like, for example, if I were to ask you how you, like, to picture an apple right now,
mm-hmm.
What is it?
The one I'm looking at, it's red on the top, but it gets kind of, and it's green, it's greenish on the bottom or maybe yellowish. And it kind of, that red kind of fades off into that yellowish at the bottom. And it's got a little stem sticking out of it that bends slightly to the right.
Is it 3D? Like, do you feel like you can pluck it out of the air and hold it? Or is it just flat, just painted on a canvas in front of you?
No, it doesn't feel like paint. It doesn't feel like painted, but I think it's 2.5D. It doesn't feel completely 3D, but as soon as I was thinking, no, I think it's flat. But then when you said, is it like painted on the canvas? I'm like, no, that looks different. Yeah, it's about 2.5D, I think.
Yeah, it's super interesting. Like when you hear how other people just envision something so simple, you get to see how other people see a little bit. And so, or like mind's eye see, right?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, when I picture an apple, it's like a really glossy, shiny red, but I'm holding it, or like I don't even have to have my hand holding it. It's almost like my mind turns it in like one of those 3D things. Like I could see
like
a full 360. Angle.
Like a graphic designer with a CAD drawing or an engineer with a CAD drawing. You spin it around and look it upside down and here and there and everywhere.
And that's super useful for me as an artist because I try to get different perspectives of things. And so I have to like picture something in space and like tilt it and turn it and like be able to draw that from my mind's eye. So like obviously that's how my mind operates. And then the other question I've asked people is, how do you visualize a calendar?
How do I visualize a what?
A calendar. Like when you think of like your month or your year, like how do you picture that in your mind?
I've never been given that any thought.
Most people haven't.
Yeah, I'd really have to think about that.
And a lot of people answer with like, you know, like they see it as you would see it on your phone. Or something, or like a wall calendar, you know. Like
yeah, it would be one of the. It would be one of those. I was just thinking, yeah. You know, I've got a calendar on my wall to my right, but I got my diary to my left that's got, you know, what's on this day. You know, today at 8 a.m. I'm doing a podcast with Nick Quinn, and these are the questions she wants me to ask her. And then her son's arriving on an airplane at 12, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, even since I was little, I've always pictured a year calendar as a circle, which is a really interesting symbol, actually, when you think of cycles and even the Celtic wheel, the year, you know, there's everything's in seasons. Like I would almost color coordinate the seasons and everything's in a circle. But when I zoom in, it becomes like a flatter calendar. But it's just really, really interesting to see how other people visualize, because that gives that little bit of insight of how we're all so freaking different and how different our brains operate. And it's just fun.
It is. You just mentioned the Celtic calendar, and something popped up for me to ask you, because you have quite good intuition or whatever, you are now living in Scotland. Okay. So you grew up in Wisconsin, and the people living in Wisconsin, you know, 0.001% of them's ancestors 500 years ago came from Wisconsin. But you're living amongst people whose ancestors could have lived in that area there for 1,000 years. Do you get a sense of that living in Scotland? Is that palpable to you?
Yes, in some ways. In some ways, the land really, really speaks to me here. I really feel that. And I think that there's a lot of people that I've met that I do get that feeling from. And then just like with anything else, there is a very disconnected part of the population. You know, I can see and hold both. Whereas I feel like I want to hold Scotland as this perfect magical place that it is, because it's so enchanted and so amazing. And the fact that the unicorn is the national animal is so perfect. but also, there is this really darker, disconnected side to the population. And I think that's also historical. That goes back into the time of the British, the Romans trying to conquer the Celts and, you know, literally wipe away their practices, their lifestyle, and convert them into this Catholicism and these other patriarchal ways of living. And so I think that there's that shadow side that still lives here. And yet there are still a lot of people that are working in the magical realm here as well.
Mm.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, they had to build a wall to try to keep them out, didn't they?
You're like, those people are a little too much. We're just going to build a wall and stay safe on this side.
Okay, where am I going to go next? So tell me more about these, you know, your adventurous travels, because I asked you in New Zealand, were there any experiences you had there that kind of added to this way you are viewing the world now? I imagine going to really old places like Croatia and Serbia and down through there, I imagine you would have had some amazing experiences there too, wouldn't you?
So we haven't gotten to the next other travels as well, which were Central America, went from Mexico down to Costa Rica. And that was a very profound time for me as well, in terms of my shedding and awakening. Definitely met a lot of people that were on a very similar journey. And really got more into the understanding of maybe just wanting to deepen my connection with the land in general, and knowing that that wasn't my place to do it was really interesting. I am not from anywhere in Central America. That's not my roots. And so while I wanted to be really learn more about maybe the culture and the medicines and different things, I could feel also that that wasn't for me. that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so then the following year, we went down to South America, and we went from Colombia down to Bolivia and worked on our Spanish and lived with different families and just had like, yeah, we lived in the jungle for a month with no electricity and lived on this farm and just had like the most incredible experience. And yeah, like we've just had so many incredible adventures in that way. And again, I knew that that wasn't like my culture, my ancestry. So while we did do some different medicines and different ceremonies, I could still feel that that wasn't totally for me, you know? And yeah, it's really, they've been all incredible adventures, but now it's more of a coming home. Yeah, the adventure is about coming home to myself and to my own ancestry, which is definitely got Celtic roots and, you know, very European, but my grandmother was actually from Japan. Really? So yeah, so I have to do some digging, and I've been to Japan when I was younger, but yeah, there's something there that I really need to explore.
Have you done like 23andMe or one of those things and found out what your ancestry actually is?
Oh, not.
No. Do you know where you're, like, do you know, apart from your grandmother from Japan, do you know where the rest of them came from?
I definitely had an Irish, it's definitely Irish.
Mm. Yeah, me too. Lots of Irish.
And German. That's definitely German, Polish. Yeah, I guess there's quite a bit of stuff that's known, but.
Wow. So in South America, it sounds like you did some plant medicine journeys. Imagine there was some profound understandings that came out of those.
Really much so. And the place that I had described where we're living for a month in with no electricity, we sat with ayahuasca, but it was in a really different way than most people would probably experience. We were there for a month, and majority of the time, like the ayahuasca vines are living like all around this bamboo hut that we're in, you know, like they're everywhere. And so we're living amongst these plants that have intense properties, right? And personalities in a way. Like it was so amazing to really connect with these plants in this way and to understand that. And we actually got to work with our hosts and brew it ourselves.
Really?
And like got to harvest it and do the whole process all day. And it was really beautiful. The purging and, you know, everything came up after that wasn't as beautiful, but it was an intense experience.
Depends if you're a prolific purger or not. I've suffered from migraines all my life, and throwing up is a big part of that. So, like, I'm a professional thrower-upper. So the purging in the ayahuasca to me wasn't like, oh, my God, this is terrible. It's like, I've spent a lot of time wrapped around the toilet bowl. So, yeah, it wasn't that big a deal. But, like, my wife would never do it because she's thrown up, like, three times in her life, and that's, like, a totally foreign thing to her. And I don't know, I guess you feel like you're dying, whereas I've felt like that a lot with the, you know, with the throwing up thing. But,
yeah, it's also different when you've dug the hole in the dirt and the darkness, and you have to walk across this little like plank in the dark that you have to go up these dirt stairs and avoid the conga ants that are like, I don't know, like an inch, maybe like a half an inch long, and they'll bite you and they'll anything. Like there was so much that was not as comfortable to get to the point to be uncomfortable.
I wonder if Mother Ayahuasca regards you differently when you just didn't shop and drink the medicine, whereas you lived amongst the plants, then you harvested the plants, then when we first bought this place we have now, it's covered in oak trees, and so there's lots of dead oak limbs to chop up and stuff. And the first time I cooked a barbecue on oak firewood that I cut, like you feel like you have a bit more of a connection to it. So I can imagine, I think there's a magic to the plant medicine, and I imagine it it was a completely different experience than it would have been if you just went somewhere and had the medicine. I mean, you were living amongst
I'd like to think so. I didn't try it any, like, I didn't go anywhere else for this. Right. We did it twice there, but it was, it was really special in that way. And so I never said, I said I would never seek it out, that if it came to us, we would do it. Yeah. You know, like, it was more of like, I just wanted to receive it rather than take it.
Right. Yeah. 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 So you, have you ever heard of my reverse bucket list? So it's like a reverse bucket list thing. If the situation arises, you'll do it, but you're not going to put it on your bucket list and go and hunt it down. Very cool. You know what I might do is ask you the questions that you chose, because I think that'll keep us busy for a while. The first question you chose was, what book do you recommend the most? Not necessarily your favorite book, but the book that you recommend to other people the most.
So I actually, when I was thinking about this, I was like, what do I actually recommend to people? I feel like it kind of just caters to whoever I'm talking to. But when I really sat with it, I was like, no, this is the book that I want to start recommending to everybody. And it's called The Enchanted Life by Sharon Blackie. And this book is all about bringing magical thinking into our daily lives, getting really present in nature, but then being able to feel enchanted by life. And that sort of enchantment, it just brings such a gratitude for everything, and it makes everything feel vibrant. And, you know, you can start to see things differently, and that will shift your perspective on everything, and you'll live a more creative and beautiful life through that. So, I think that's the book that I will now start recommending to everybody.
And what was the surname of her, Sharon what?
Blackie.
Okay. I've not heard that one, so I'm writing that down. Okay, second question. If you could deliver a message to the world, one that people would listen to, what would that be? Or your favorite quote, or both?
So I think it's very simple, and I would love everybody to know that they are creative in some way, and that you have the capacity to live a creative life, and that can look different for anybody. But I believe that it's the key to living a full life as well.
That's fun. What's the most worthwhile thing you've ever done? Something that changed the course of your life?
I mean, obviously, after we talked about this, it's always staying true to my art and practice. And but I really think overall, it's been this past couple of years, this journey of learning what it means to come home to myself. And that's through education of just learning about what we've talked about with emotions. It's learning more about horses. It's learning more about the relationship that is possible with them. It's learning about energy. But it's always coming back to learning more about myself and how I operate in the world, and how that can affect all my relationships, that can affect just, I think that's been the most important thing, is this dedicated time to learning, growing.
Have we actually discussed that dedicated time, or is this after world travels?
Yeah, we never even.
Okay.
Well, let's 5 years of.
Yeah, let's go, because I'm not sure where we've got to, and because we've done all the lead up work. So you've done lots of traveling and stuff, and you just mentioned the past 5 years. So what's been going on in the past 5 years?
Yeah. So when we were in Bolivia, we were starting to come back out. And when we crossed the border back into Peru, which we listened to our intuition and it told us to make our way back home, like fly home. And when we were crossing the border, all these people on hazmat suits were like taking our temperature and talking to us in rapid Spanish. And we were like, wait, what? What's happening? Like, had no clue. We were just, living a random backpacker life. And then all of a sudden,
so this is January 2020,
March It was.
Okay. It's way late. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. We had never even heard of it. That's how just totally gone we were.
Been in the jungle. Yeah.
And yeah, so we had flown out March 15th, March 17th. One of those days that it's just like we missed it by this much.
Did you fly back to the US?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I flew out from Australia March 17th. They had closed the borders to anybody flying from the UK to the US. And I was in Australia and we were afraid that they were going to, Robin and I were in Australia, and we were afraid we weren't going to be able to get back in if we left it any longer. So it was March 17th.
Yeah, it was pretty much that exact time because the borders closed in Peru right after. And they had one of the hardest lockdowns in the world. It's wild. But anyways, so we got back and all my plans of having a summer job and becoming an artist part-time really shifted quickly into I have no money. There's no jobs. What's the world? Is it ending? And I just started putting my art online. And this was simultaneously when I've been going through this like unraveling for like maybe 2 years, like softly. And then this unraveling journey of my relationship with horses. And then at this point, this was me really in it where I was like questioning everything. And I started putting in art. I started putting my feelings about like how I wanted to see horses and how I felt about them in the past. And I started putting that online and sharing it, and it connected with people. And I was like, I was just doing this for me. Right? I was just kind of like doing that part for myself. And I didn't realize how many people would connect with that. And yeah, so I was going through this really deep process of just like unlearning, relearning, and then absorbing as much information as I could from podcasts, books, like anything and everything. And I had already been going down like an energy working, like kind of rabbit hole a little bit. So I'd always known that I was really drawn to doing like hands-on like energy work. And that was kind of like my lead up into the deeper down the rabbit hole with horses, because I could see how much horses would shift and change in the presence of me being really present and sitting in that energy. So that was just like opening whole new levels of doorways for me. And yeah. And so from there, I just kind of started building up a bit of like a social media presence, which I wasn't expecting. And I had never even used social media really before that. So I was like kind of coming into this new world of like, I can use this for other things and like talking to my friends I haven't seen in 5 years, you know, like I had no clue what to do with this. But yeah, it just started really unfolding very quickly. And that's the start of the journeys with the portraits and everything along those lines. And yeah, this whole time, the parallel of my growth in my art and my growth and learning with horses is just like on this trajectory together.
And so that's when you started doing the what do you call them?
I called them whole self portraits.
Whole self portraits. Yeah. That's it. Yeah.
And yeah, I was kind of doing like commissions for people and doing like random stuff. And then yes, the portraits came in and that just like blew me open for this, like what we've talked about as a channel in terms of accepting that that's something I could do. And yeah, I've had a couple, like the past year and a half has been a little bit of a drought, if you will. Maybe even longer. I've been going through like ups and downs quite a bit in the past 2 years with like what it is that I really want to be doing.
The drought, are you talking about people not buying your work or you not having things come through you?
It's more of a, I can do the work. Physically, I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't coming from the same place.
Mm.
So I was starting to feel a little lost, a little, not even unmotivated. It was almost like I just felt like I just needed to go deeper. I needed to experience more. I needed to find new levels of my art before I could keep working for people anymore. And I didn't even know what that meant. But I just moved over to Scotland and I live by the sea and I've never lived by the sea before. And so I'd spend the days with the ocean and just like ask myself about the mysteries of the world. And I just kind of sat with myself a lot in this past like year and a half of a lot of questions, a lot of what do I want to do? What's the meaning of any of this? Like, why do I want to be an artist? What's the whole point? Like, they were pretty like, I kind of wanted to just work at a cafe and like have no one talk to me. Like, that's kind of where I was at some point. So I was just like, why do I have to do this? Why is this the thing that lights me up? Because it's sucking me dry right now. It's not what's doing it for me. And even though I had the conscious knowing that those ebbs and flows are very real and you have to accept that, it was still like when you're in it, it's hard to see out of it. It's hard to see that I'll ever feel that like spark of inspiration again. And this past year, or not even past year, I've been feeling like this next chapter was coming for a while, but I had to be patient and wait for it. And it kind of started with like, okay, I'm going to get this new website because I can really put myself on it. Instead of like this half-assed one that I've had for ages, I can really put myself into this website and almost like see myself in a new way and what I want to share with people. And then my partner and I just went to India in January for a month. And that was crucial. That was what I needed for this rebirth, if you will.
Tell me about India, because India fascinates me.
It fascinates me as well. It is a wild place. I actually never felt like an intense draw to India, but I knew it would be what I needed it to be, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the cities were very, very overwhelming, like so much simulation, so much chaos and like noise and people.
That's what I've heard. Noise, smells, colors, people.
Everything.
Sensory overload.
So much so. And yet everything still worked. Like people did, I mean, obviously people, there was crashes once in a while, but like for how much chaos there was on the roads, it was incredible to watch how people like swerved in and out and like dodged people. And it's almost like when you see like those flocks of birds or like schools of fish, and they're all just kind of doing their own, like they're all together moving. And it's like, it's this weird harmony with it. It was very fascinating. A week, maybe 2 weeks prior to us leaving, I just totally shut off with social media. I was
leaving to go to India or leaving India?
Leaving to go to India.
Okay. Yep.
So I wanted to do a total detox during India before as well. And I told myself that the only thing I'm allowed to do is art for myself. If I want to do anything drawing wise or anything, like I can't think about client work. I can't think about, you know, anything else. I'm not allowed to, because this is, it's a clear out time for me. And it's interesting, even I've not really spoken about this India journey very much recently. It feels really profound. And yet it's like almost like nothing happened. It's very, very interesting. And I think the farther away I go from it, I can see more clarity. But it was almost like just this time where I'm just sitting in this car for hours going to the next place and just having so much space in my mind to just be for the first time in a while. I wasn't trying to flood it with information. I wasn't trying to force anything out of it. It was just like, just taking it all in. And it took me 3 weeks to do a single drawing. And I know it doesn't sound like that much, but like when I draw every day, almost like 3 weeks of not doing anything felt like so long. And yeah, I was in this space of just like, I just need a total reset. And so we went up to the Himalayas and did a three-day trek up there, and just got to be in the mountains and camped overnight. And it was just stunning. It was so beautiful. And that was the first and only place that we had any quiet. And when we came back on our drive back, I got this intense hit of, oh my God, I've I know what book I have to write. And I've wanted to write a book since I was little. Like, this has been a huge, huge thing on my own real bucket list, not reverse. Like, this is like the number one thing for me, was always to write a book. And while I've done like illustrations for other people's books, this is my first personal project, which is crazy. I've not done a single personal project yet as my career of an artist. And as we're sitting in this car, I was looking through these old poems that I wrote back in 2020 when I was kind of really in the thick of like my own unraveling. And I would write these poems about just our relationship with horses and like my own journey with it, but in like a more collective standpoint, not just like my journey, you know. It was a little bit more broad. And I looked back at those poems and I was like, I could see how these could bridge together. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. If I just made this and this and this, I sandwiched these poems into one and made a book in an hour. Like, it just happened so quickly. And I was like, oh my God, I can see all the pictures already. Oh my God, I can see every single page. And that night, I just sat with my sketchbook and I sketched out every single page almost to a T with what it was going to be like. And I was like, I've been feeling so lost with what I need to do creatively and artistically, at least for like myself, for so long. And for this to just come out so quick, and obviously, again, 3 weeks of not doing anything, leading up, all this other stuff along the way, but it was just so potent and powerful. And so after that, I got all this momentum for it. And I came back, I structured my life differently. I just saw my life differently. I was like, this book is going to change things for me. It's almost out. Like, it's almost almost in my hands right now. But from the time I get back from India at the end of January, it took me 7 weeks, start to finish, to do, while working on other client projects. So, I mean, it just...
I can just see the girl in the Queen's Gambit laying in bed with all the chess people going. That's the image I'm getting of you taking all these chess pieces that have been sitting around for years and just organizing them all in the right order to make the magic happen.
Yes, exactly. And all these themes that I've been working with in my art and sharing on social media for years, I'm like, what is it that they're meant to be doing, you know? And now I've got this book that it's going to be, I hope, my hope for it is that it'll be a bridge for people. And what I mean by that is that I want it to be a gentle invitation for people who might not be totally into the spiritual energetic world quite yet. I want it to be an invitation to look and just reflect on what it is that we expect of horses in general as the norm. So the title is Dear Equestrians, Evolving Horsemanship from Black and White to Technicolor. And
wow,
the whole premise of it is that, like, it starts off as just like a letter to anybody who's ever loved horses. And it starts off in black and white. And it's kind of like, these are the ways that we've always seen things and done, and we've been taught this way. So everything that's in the more traditional sense that I talk about is in the sketchy black and white drawing. And then whenever I talk about like the possibility and the potential and the relationship and the energetic side, all of a sudden it's just these like exploding vibrant colors and all these different things that are so much more like ethereal, right? And so you can see the stark contrast. So it's a visual journey as well in that sense. So and you can take it in however deep you want to take it. So if somebody's not ready to fully go down that yet, you could totally just take it at face value and still get probably a little bit of something from it. And then if you really want to feel the energy of the images and want to go really deep into the layers of it, that's also available. So I hope that it'll be accessible to a wide variety of people. And my aim is to bring it into the more traditional world of horses and be able to share that. So that way, as we talked about in the beginning, art can change people's minds because it's about their reflection of it. It's their resonance with it. And you get to choose how you take this. And obviously I have words to go along with it, but they're not telling you how to think totally. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's little snippets here and there that might
trigger
some here and there. Okay. But they're more invitations to look at things in a different way. And yeah, I'm really, really excited about sharing that because I think that it's just, it's a powerful way to enact change is, and at the very back, there's also a section, a very large section of like a reference section where I kind of depict in tiny little images and in words, different concepts or wordings that maybe we'll need, like, you know, I don't even know, like authenticity and energy and, you know, things that are kind of simple, but like kind of giving a visual and a description of it. So people can start to work with this stuff in a more tangible way. So it doesn't just go over their heads.
Right.
And yeah, it's just, it's meant to be kind of just a heart opener, I hope. And I want it to just live in people's barns and just like sit on the coffee table so that you can just like open it whenever. And like, my hope is that it just kind of travels to people who are like, oh, I could, you know, somebody.
It's one of those.
Oh, I know somebody who loves horses.
It's like The Alchemist or The Celestine Prophecy or something. It's one of those books that show up when people are ready to see it. Where is it going to be available?
So I'm available for my website. I'm going to be doing it a little different. It's not going to, it might be on Amazon eventually, but I'm not publishing it through it. So I'm going to be, it'll be on my website shop and hopefully I'm getting the print booth this week.
Okay.
And then from there, I really hope that I'll have.
So we usually do this at the end of the show, but we'll do the website thing now. So your website is Nika Draws Nature, isn't it?
Yes.
NikaDrawsNature.com. There are some questions that I haven't asked you, and you were just talking about your art, doing this book, the whole thing. And one of the questions that you chose was, what advice do you have for people about to enter your occupation? And, you know, is your occupation an artist, or is your occupation an artist who downloads stuff from the ether, which is not the same as an artist?
All artists, all creative people, everybody has the ability to get those downloads. It's what you do with them, and it's if you trust them. I do believe that. I think that we all have that capacity. However, if that occupation is an artist or a graphic designer, to keep it simple, my biggest advice is to make time for your own art.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that can just be advice for anybody. And I think when you're feeling stuck or when you're feeling, I don't know, if anything, I just always come back to, what is it that you can let yourself express yourself through? So if that's music, if that's writing, if that's baking, I don't know, like whatever it is that gets you out of your head and into the body or into a flow or into creativity, like do that thing more often. Because that will stir up something else in you. You know, like that's going to keep you not alive, but like full of life.
Have you ever read Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert? Yeah. You know, she talks about in that she said, I was always going to be a writer. I wasn't necessarily going to do it for a living. She said, I've been a cook. I've been a stable hand. I've shoveled shit. You know, I've built fence. I've done all these things. She didn't put the pressure of herself on writing to survive. She wrote to express herself. Yeah. And that's kind of what you're saying.
And the other piece to her book that I just sit with all the time is the idea that ideas are their own thing.
Yeah.
And that they float around. And if you don't do anything with them, they'll go on to the next person that's ready for it. So I love that so much because I really do believe that in some way, that these little whispers that come up, it's like, are you ready for this? If you're not, like, I'll find somebody else who is, and then we'll pop over to the next.
Yeah, I'm reading a book right now. It's actually a fiction, which I don't read much fiction, but they're in India and they're talking to this holy man, and he's talking about fate and free will, and they're debating fate and free will, and he's saying that, you know, they go hand in hand. There's not, it's not one or the other. There is the universal energy that zooms in and around and presents things and whatever. And then you've got the free will to deal with that, how you deal with that. And the connection between the two of those is life. It's and that's kind of what you're talking about. These ideas are there, whether you want to pick them up or not. So they're presented to you, and what if you decide to, you know, that story in Big Magic where she talks about, you know, she wrote the book but didn't write the book, and then the other lady writes the same book because she plucked, because that idea came to Elizabeth Gilbert, but she didn't do anything with it. And so it said, okay, well, I'll just give it to somebody else. Or somebody else. That's, I don't even know if
such universe, a fascinating story.
Yes. I don't know if it gave it to the other lady, or the other lady just, you know, there was the free will. The free will. She picked it up. It was floating around there. And, yeah. Interesting stuff. And one last question that you chose was, what's your relationship like with fear? Now that you're telling me that you've made the plunge and you're writing a book.
So I feel like that's changed over the years. I think my relationship with fear used to be more of a ego adrenaline based. Like, I used to think that if you're scared of something, or not even scared, but it was almost like I just had this need for an adrenaline rush, or, you know, like, face your fears. Like, I wanted to do big things, like scary things, you know? And now fear looks a little different. And what I'm scared of looks a little different. Like, I was actually just telling a friend the other day about, like, I've got this podcast, I've got a couple other podcasts I'm doing right now. And she was just like, if you would have told me 5-6 years ago that you would be public speaking, I would have just, like, nobody could pay me money to believe, like, put a bet on that. Like, there's, like, public speaking used to scare the shit out of me. Like, I would just stutter and fumble over my words, and I just felt so insecure. And so what do? I now have to force myself into situations that I speak, at least knowing that public will hear it, or other people will hear it. And so things like that, it's like, I have to ask myself, why am I scared? And I lean into it. What I do to act upon it might look different every time, but it's more about acknowledging where the fear lies and then ask.
Great answer. And there is another question here, but I think we might have covered it before, but you chose, what did you want to be as a child?
I'm sure we've covered this, and it seems very obvious, but I actually literally wrote in a journal entry when I was like 8 years old, saying, when I grow up, I want to be an artist and a horseback rider. And then in another thing down the line, I found a journal entry for, is like, I want to be a writer. And I would tell my mom I want to be a novelist, whatever that means. And I would write stories and poems. And so I always had this dream of, like, doing all of this. And so if I could tell my 7-year-old self that this is what I'm doing now, I think I would be, one, I'd probably be like, well, obviously, you know, like, obviously that's what you do, not knowing anything about adult worlds and how hard that actually is to do. But like my true essence of myself, that they say that, like, when you're 7 or up to your 7, that's like the purest essence of who you are. And what lit you up then is often what truly is a part of you. And yeah, I think that my 7-year-old self knowing that this is what I'd be doing would feel very happy about that.
Wow. I was just thinking, recently I had someone on the podcast who you did all the artwork for their card deck. Who was that? Oh, it was Kate Nelligan. Okay, I thought it might have been Kate. Yeah. She was such a cool guest. I've had so much cool feedback about everybody loved Kate Nelligan. So yeah.
Yeah, we worked on an Oracle deck for a while, and that's available as well now. And I think, yeah, I've got another one coming out as well with another woman, Lori Holiday, and she's up in Santa Cruz. And yeah, I think Oracle decks are such a cool way to do exactly what we're talking about with like this symbolism of art and how to make meaning from it for yourself. It's not about necessarily being told what the future holds for you. It's more about making meaning with symbols and concepts and metaphors to understand and kind of like unravel things that are happening in your own life and make meaning from it for better or worse. But I think that it's a really powerful process to have that kind of self-reflection and having some other tools, maybe like we could call it tools of divination, sure. And I do believe that there's some energetic force behind that and kind of guiding the cards sometimes.
Right.
But if you want to just simply take it for face value of like, I picked up this card, how does this relate to me? That's just called.
Right. Yes. Most certainly. Okay. So this is the part of the thing where we do all the bits. How do people find you? You've got Nika Draws Nature on, that's your website. What about you're on Instagram? What are you on there?
Nika Draws Nature on Instagram, and that's pretty much all I do.
Okay, and why don't you give us the rundown on, like, on your website? What offerings do you have for people?
So, I actually now really focus on logo and branding for alternative horse practices.
Yeah.
So my people are in this like spiritually led horse person world. I don't even know what to be called this.
Yeah.
We're all naming it something different. This right. Conscious horse world, whatever it is. These are the people that I'm creating logos and branding for because people are stepping up and into this next level of their businesses. Like it's wild how many people are at this point of like, okay, I'm ready to take the next step and I needed this logo to be representative of who I am now and who I want to attract into my business. Because this isn't about marketing. I don't help people market. I help people attract by resonance. You know, I help people magnetize through art and symbol because that is the thing that calls to our soul. That's what I want to help other people do for their businesses. And so I don't create for, you know, whatever the market says is the best thing to do. It's like, what makes you? And we go through like a mood board and, you know, do all these things where we've really dissected and it's a deep process. It's not like just tell me what you want and I'll do it. It's like, we're really in it. So that's my main thing right now.
You know, it's interesting the way you put that because the other day I saw it was a quote and it said, I don't chase, I attract. And marketing is the chasing. And you're not talking about marketing. Yeah. You're not trying to chase people. You're trying to set people up to where they attract the right people.
Exactly. Because you don't want to work with the people that you chase. You want to work with the people that are ready to work with you, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's most of what I'm offering right now. I have other things like if people come to me with a vision, that's amazing. You know, whether it's space for it right now or in a few months, I've done some illustrations for some children's books, the Oracle deck and, you know, other things like that. But yeah, this book that I'm coming out with by myself this time is my new baby, my new project that I'm birthing into the world. And I'm really, really excited about having something that I can say is totally mine this time.
And how far off do you think that is?
Hopefully everything will be ready to go.
Okay. So yeah, that's right. You get the proof pretty soon, don't you?
Hopefully it all looks
Wow. Well, good luck with that. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure having a chat with you and getting to know you. And thank you once again for my amazing whole self portrait here on the wall behind me.
You're very welcome. And thank you for having me on. It's been such a good conversation. We really went down tons of different avenues.
We did. And I got a new quote. It's not about eliminating. It's about illuminating. You write that down. And then a little squiggle underneath it and write Nika Quinn, because we can't forget who said that. I always like to shout out to the people that inspire quotes. So, yeah, thanks so much for joining me. And you guys at home, thanks so much for listening. And we'll catch you on the next episode of the Journey On Podcast.
Thanks for being a part of the Journey On Podcast with Warwick Schiller. Warwick has over 850 full-length training videos on his online video library at videos.warwickschiller.com. Be sure to follow Warwick on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram to see his latest training advice and insights.